it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
What's up, everybody? It's an election night. I love an election night. I used to really love election nights until Donald Trump started winning elections, and they're a little triggering now. But I do still love them deep down inside. I'm Tim Miller. I'm here with Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, JVL, editor, author of the Triad newsletter. We'll have our girl Lauren Egan coming in here in a little bit. She's been covering the Dems. And we just want to do a little live podcasting, live streaming with you on a big election night. Set the table here. Big win for the 8-year-old girls basketball team. I coach the Honey Badgers tonight. That's, I know that's what you guys are here to hear about. It's been a tough season, but things are clicking right as we get to playoff. Anyway.
Tim's working the refs. That's why.
I was working the refs. And it was working, baby. We got a big W tonight. Okay. On to the actual news you're here for. The Texas Senate race is on both sides. It's the one that we're most focused on. There'll be a couple other races we're monitoring. Returns are coming in on both the Republican and the Democratic side. We had a delay. I guess the big news of the night is that in Dallas County, the Republicans don't know how to run elections or don't care. I don't know if this is kind of news to you guys, but in Dallas County, there was like mass voter confusion. One of my buddies lives there, so I was texting him about it. It's like the election site was down. A lot of places where people usually went to vote, you weren't allowed to vote there because they changed the rules. You had to go to your precinct, and a lot of people tried to vote, weren't able to. So they extended it an hour. I think that in particular, I think Jasmine Crockett's campaign was interested in that because it's her home base. It's her base of support in Dallas. So that might delay us a little bit tonight. That's the big news. The early results here are looking pretty favorable for James Tallarico, just to be blunt. Not over yet, but if you look at the Kalshi prediction markets, they've basically called it for Tallarico already. Dave Wasserman over at Cook Political is very sober-minded. He says it's looking like Tallarico. The broad swaths of that, and then I'll let you guys kind of weigh in, is Crockett continues to do well with a voting base of Black voters, older Black voters in particular. She's doing well in a lot of the counties that Joe Biden did well in the 2020 Texas primary, where he beat Bernie, but it was a bigger field, right? So a lot of other vote was fractured. Tallarico is doing well as expected, like around Austin. He's running up Saddam Hussein numbers in Austin. He's up 76-23 there right now. And in West Texas, that Austin to San Antonio area. The interesting thing is Houston was one we were wondering, another urban area, you know, a lot of Black voters in Houston, but also a lot of college-educated voters, which seems to be the big kind of fault line here. Tallarico is down in Houston, but it's a lot closer than I think people thought. And then the other group was Hispanic voters along the Rio Grande Valley, and they're a little later to come in, but early results seem to indicate that Tallarico is doing well among Hispanic voters. So that is kind of where we're at to start. Any big takes from you guys on why this matters? What you're seeing. I guess, JB, I want you to go first because you kind of wrote about why this matters.
I got to try it. So the total. Okay. If it plays out the way we think it is, total vindication for the Tim Miller, Sarah Longwell view of Democratic politics going forward. For people who are not maybe regular viewers of this, Tim Miller has been saying Democrats got to try doing different things everywhere. Sarah Longwell has been saying, got to speak to Trump voters, got to try to meet them where they are, speak their language, maybe lead with faith at some point. And Tallarico did this. And Jasmine Crockett did something different too. Now, what she did wasn't very effective, maybe, it turns out. But she tried running like a shit poster, like, hey, I'm just going to go for low info voters and try to turn that out. And it seems to have not worked. But that's good. It's good to try these things. It is good to run the experiments. And what I most wanted, I just didn't want like a 49.8 to 49.6.
We might still get that.
Yeah, I would not.
We might. But it looks like we're going to get like a clean result and not a dusty finish, as they would call it in wrestling, but a clean win. And it's good to have tried an experiment in real time and have gotten a verdict on it and not to just have had like two or three candidates were all indistinguishable from one another running in the same way.
Yeah, let me talk a little bit about why it matters, like, big picture. So people watching this live stream are probably political nerds, so this might be a little basic, but I do just want to lay out the fact that Texas has been like a desperation reach state for Democrats for so long. They thought they could get somewhere with Beto against Ted Cruz. It didn't work. Colin Allred didn't work. Just hasn't worked in Texas. However, the Republicans, much like they did in 2022, seem primed to nominate. We haven't gotten to the Republicans yet, but there is a strong chance that they might nominate a guy named Ken Paxton, who has more baggage than Tim Miller on a trip to Europe. It is, I don't know, do you pack a lot to go? I guess it's all Speedos and stuff. I don't know. You're muted, dude.
I was coughing. I thought that was mute. I'm just going to move on. What I thought that was, I shouldn't say. So okay. You can just keep going.
A lot of baggage, Ken Paxton.
Big bag.
You know, and not he's there's been a lot like the tabloidy stuff with his wife and affairs and things like that. But that's not it's also like a ton of corruption. This guy was actually impeached by his own state at one point. He leads with his faith, too, just like James Del Rico, although there's a few problems with that. And so his wife divorced him not that long ago, saying that he had offended their spiritual home and arrangement. So in a year where Republican enthusiasm might be at its absolute lowest point with a candidate quality problem on the Republican side, it is the closest opportunity Democrats have had in a really long time to pick up a Senate seat in Texas at a moment when that could be the difference between Democrats being even with Republicans.
Second coming of Doug Jones versus Roy Moore.
That's right. It's big race. It's a big race. And so who the person is on the Democratic side is very important. And so you're testing what I've really liked this Texas primary, even though it's been kind of ugly at a national level. Doing the focus groups with Democrats was actually a bit of a relief. I don't know if you guys listened to the episode, but Democrats in Texas were like,
I'm making a big announcement. I'm getting back on the focus group podcast right now. I had to take a year off because I just couldn't hear the voters. I was too mad at them. But I should have listened to the Texas primary one. I feel bad I didn't right now. And I'm getting back on starting this Saturday. Sorry, continue. Tell us
what
you learned.
Thank you. I can't believe that. Because you know what we were talking about what a nasty race it's been. They liked both of them. 70% approval for both of them. They are not really tracking like the all of the drama, the online stuff. They were like, on one side, we got Jasmine Crockett. She's fiery. She's authentic. She goes hard. She's a fighter. I love that. On the other side, we've got James Talrico, who talks about faith, which is so good in Texas. And so if Talrico pulls this out, I think what you're going to see is the divide between Black voters and Hispanic voters. Like, we already see this. We got a guy named Talrico. We've got a Black woman in the race. And so Blacks and Hispanics seem to be lining up.
Talrico, just because his name ends in a vowel, he's not actually Hispanic.
I know, but this is everybody is talking about the Hispanic, Black thing. Like, Hispanics are going for Talrico.
Yep.
Talrico.
It's one of my people.
Yeah. Is he just Catholic?
Jefferson Davis County in Texas.
Can you just let me finish this and then I'm not going to say that much more. Okay. So then where it goes is going to be down to a lot of the like white Democrats in Texas. And here's the thing about the white Democrats in Texas.
The whites.
They, I don't think, have as much of a dog in the fight as it seems like Hispanics and Black voters do. They want to win. And so this became, for those voters, an electability conversation. Who do they think could potentially beat Ken Paxton? And if this goes the way it looks like it's going to go with Talrico winning, it's because they decided he was the more electable candidate. Probably not that they liked him better, but that he had a better chance of beating Ken Paxton in a general election.
I want to de-racialify that a little bit because I think that just we've learned a lot over the last 6 years, in particular, the Democratic primary voters overall are pragmatic. overall, yeah. They're pragmatic. They're more pragmatic than Republicans. It doesn't mean that they won't pick the more lefty candidate. We even talked about the Maine race earlier today. And so people say, well, if Democrat voters are pragmatic, why isn't Janet Mills doing better? I think that they're pragmatically making a bet. Maybe they're wrong, but I think that they think that Graham Platner would actually be a stronger candidate in the general because of the way he codes, is a working class guy, and because they tried Sarah Gideon last time and she lost. They don't want a boring old person. So the Democratic voters care a lot more about electability in their primary. It's a higher education audience. It's a higher engaged audience. It's a higher news watching audience. And you know, this is our boy Laksha Jain over at Split Ticket. And he's saying that Jazz McCarthy is basically underperforming everywhere. And obviously she's doing better in black counties and closer to her home counties. But like based on the baseline of what they thought that she was going to do, she seems to be underperforming everywhere. And you know, and so I think that the Hispanic voters are also being pragmatic. And again, despite that Tallarico sounds a little more Hispanic, he's just a white guy. He's just a pastor. So I don't know that there's a big racial affinity there. I think that folks are looking at this and saying, look, this guy, we've talked about the religious aspect. He goes on Fox. He went on Joe Rogan. He at least has a theory of the case for talking to Trump voters. This is my big thing about Crockett the whole time. She didn't even offer a theory of the case for what her message was to them. It was basically like, fuck you, Trump voters, and we'll see what happens. Maybe that would have worked. It seems like we're not going to know. We don't know for sure. But I just think that there's a lot. You see this across the board now for a while in Democratic primaries. A lot of pragmatism. I hate to bring up old wounds, but it's kind of why some of us thought there should have been a primary in the 2024 presidential campaign. So I do think the Democratic voters would have been pragmatic about that. But anyway, we'll continue to monitor that as it goes on. Over to the Republican side, unless JVL, you have anything to add to that.
No, I agree completely.
I think on the Republican side, we are probably headed towards a runoff. You got to get 50%. There were three candidates on the Republican Senate side, John Cornyn, Ken Paxton, and Wesley Hunt was the third candidate. Sarah talked about Ken Paxton's baggage earlier. The relevance of, I think, the result in this primary is a lot of people are saying if Ken Paxton won by a lot, then maybe the runoff would kind of be pro forma because Trump would endorse him. And that's not happening right now. Right now, John Cornyn's up by about 4%. It looks like there's a lot of vote not out, or a lot of vote out uncounted out in rural Texas. And you kind of like look at the map here, you know, Cornyn is doing a little better in the suburbs and Paxton's doing better out in kind of the exurbs. So we'll see how that goes. I think it's possible that Paxton could run up the score in some of these other counties. So it doesn't look like Houston's in either. So TBD on that. A couple other things to monitor on the Republican side that are a little bit of fun for everybody. Well, one's kind of dark, but the other ones are kind of fun. Dan Crenshaw. he's got a primary from the right. I made a suggestion to a couple of and I was like, look, if you're a Bulwark podcast listener and you live in Houston and you don't have a dog in the Senate race, maybe consider pulling the Republican ballot and voting against Dan Crenshaw just for kicks. Right now he's down 53-44 to a man named Steve Toth that I'm just going to be honest, I don't know much about, but he cannot possibly be as smug and condescending and annoying as Dan Crenshaw. So we'll keep an eye on that. That's early. It's very early. Only 28% of the vote.
Looking forward to the Dan Crenshaw podcast.
The sham, it exists already. It's doing worse than mine. The sham wow guy is also running in a primary. That's something election to monitor. Yeah, there's a big issue that they wouldn't let him put his name sham wow on the thing. On the ballot. So he's mad about that. Thinks it's a steal. And then Tony Gonzalez, who is the congressman who's Gomar set herself on fire. He is also in a primary. He's up 1.4%. So that's kind of what we're watching on the Republican side. Anything I missed there you wanted to talk about on the Republican side, Sarah?
Did you hit North Carolina?
No. Sorry, I'm often. Why don't you talk about North Carolina?
Yeah. So Mike Whatley has won the Republican primary in North Carolina, which means he is going to face off against the guy who's going to beat him, whose name, I don't know, I'm just blanking on right now. Anybody got it? Roy Cooper. Thank you. So that's the only other one I'm really watching. I do want to go back to the Texas Senate race for just one second.
Yep.
Because I was seeing some chatter in the comments about how like running to the center doesn't work. And I'm interested in that comment because I am wondering which candidate they mean. Because one of the interesting things about the Texas Senate race is that I think people think that Jasmine Crockett is the more progressive candidate in the race, but she is not. She is the more, just as a strict policy matter or a strict establishment Democratic matter, Jasmine Crockett's pretty like establishment Democrat. And James Taurico is, I think, sort of the more progressive one when it comes to actual policy beliefs. And so I don't know who they think is running to the center. I do think it's probably fair to say some people think Taurico codes more center because he seems more temperamentally moderate. Yeah. Like some people think he's a little more boring. I heard this in the focus groups that some people thought he was a little milquetoast and she was just more like fiery, had more passion.
Yeah. I also say that's just wrong. I hate when people make just blanket statements like that. I do think there's this like really big online thing where like it's like a big fight between moderates and progressives. And it's just like, you know, sometimes the progressives are right and sometimes the moderates are right. I hate to bring that, bring it down like that. But running to the center does help sometimes. Ruben Gallego, who I had on the pod today, ran to the center on immigration and outperformed Kamala Harris by like 12 points and ended up winning his Senate race while she
because
lost.
He lives in Arizona.
He lives in Arizona, right? So it made sense for him to do that. You know, we're talking about Plattner. Like, Plattner is kind of running to the left, but it's a populist left. I think that makes sense, right? So, you know, they don't – there's never – folks that say that running the center never works, they don't ever offer that same opinion when it's the Republican side. So I think it's important to make sure you just – for a thought exercise, if you think it never works, think about a Republican primary. Like, do you think the Republicans benefited from having Carrie Lake – as their nominee in Arizona versus having like a more boring moderate person? I don't. Like, I think that they, and so, you know, at the presidential level, things are very different. And so I would encourage people, you can't necessarily map presidential politics in a swing state where there's all this national attention onto what's happening in like a Texas Senate race. Like, the dynamics of it are quite different.
Donald Trump, people thought he coded as a moderate. They thought he was moderate on social issues.
Oh, because he was.
Because he was moderate on social issues.
And spending and war.
And spending. And, you know, he was, save Medicare, Social Security.
Didn't turn out to happen on war. But he did run to the center on war. He didn't end up doing it.
Social issues either, actually.
Yeah, he said,
He wound up feeling low.
He said it. We all saw the truth, but some of the voters didn't. So, you know, there's maybe some lessons to learn from that. Okay, more results coming in. Taurico now 52%. To Crockett 46, and we're not going to really know until we get to Dallas and see what happens out of Dallas. But signs are looking towards Crockett. One other thing I just want to mention on House primaries, just a couple other races we're monitoring. And why don't you guys shoot out questions to us? You can shoot a super chat to us if you're on YouTube or questions on Substack. A couple other primaries I just want to mention: Valerie Fouché. Is it Fouché or Fouché? I don't know if I'm getting that right. She is a North Carolina Democrat that was supported by AIPAC and had kind of a left challenger. Wasserman says she's looking okay so far. Al Green, who's more of kind of an establishment Democrat has basically complained about him, is that he's old. Very old. He has a younger challenger, I think also slightly to the left, but that race is basically mapping along generational lines. And Green seems like he's in trouble. It's a Texas Democrat. So Al Green and Dan Crenshaw and maybe Tony Gonzalez in the House on the ropes a little bit. Sarah, were you trying to chime in on something?
I wasn't. No.
Hyper-driven here. Taurico codes more center and appeals more to the Latinos. Yeah, I think that there is something to that. But we'll see. We'll see how that plays out in a general. I mean, Taurico has not really in any meaningful way actually taken like centrist positions, has he? Is there something that I'm missing?
Well, I mean, talking about Jesus codes as centrist,
right? Sure. Right?
But
I mean, actual issues.
Yeah. Right. Well, but here's my question for you guys: is it possible that Taurico could help some people understand that if you take the Jesus stuff seriously, it's both based and woke? Like, I mean, this is one of the things I've spent the last decade sitting around going, is like, this this Christian nationalism stuff has fuck all to do with Jesus. And if you just look at all the Catholic doctrine, and I understand Christianity is more just Catholicism, sort of. Like it's it's awfully woke. All the woke stuff is in there. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, comfort the prisoner. This is all that new covenant stuff. It does not mesh well with what is political Christianity in America.
Yeah, I think that's right. I also just think it would be helpful, because one of the things I know listening to the focus groups is, while Democrats don't lead with their faith, they're plenty faithful. If you bring up religion, lots of Democrats will speak to it. But if you talk to Republicans and ask them, why are you a Republican? They will point to their faith as a central reason, which I think confuses people as to how somebody could, vote for Donald Trump if they're a Christian. But if your entire culture has intertwined your Christianity with your political identity, and your identity is like deeply rooted, that holds up better to change than Democrats who are, say, I'm a Democrat because I believe in XYZ. Because then if a candidate doesn't do XYZ, you get mad and maybe don't vote for them. Whereas Republicans are willing to vote for anybody who shares that identity, even if they don't share the faithfulness.
Yeah. Nicholas says, speaking of coding, JVL is coding Episcopalian. Which shots fired big time. Yeah.
Wow.
Lib ass JVL coding Episcopalian with women priests.
Those are hurtful words.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Here's the other thing about Talrigo. Talrigo came into a lot of people's consciousness, I'm pretty sure, but he went on Fox and he had a huge viral moment with Pete Hegseth, going after Pete Hegseth, the current Secretary of War, who was at the time a co-host on a weekend talk show. And James Talrigo was trying to get him to say who won the 2020 election, which is a good gambit. And then he goes on Rogan, and Rogan by all accounts likes him. And like says nice things about him, which shows you the benefit of like trying, showing up. A lot of these guys, this is another thing that always annoyed me when people like the Democrats shouldn't go on those things because they have bad opinions. It's like, all these guys are stupid. I was about to say the R word, a lot of them are very dumb. And it's like, if you're smart, like James Talrigo, you can sit there for 2 hours with Joe Rogan and run circles around him. it's not that hard to win some people over. Riago says, if Cooper or one of the Dems that has lost him in Texas win the general election, are they the front runner for 2028? I don't think that Roy Cooper is going to be in the 2028 mix. God love him. I, who the hell knows, though? I mean, I think that Talrigo, there'd be a lot of pressure on him not to run. Because the Democrats finally win in Texas and finally get a Texas seat, and then you give up the Senate seat. That said, I don't know. A lot of people told Barack Hussein Obama that he should wait for Hillary Clinton. We saw how that turned out. So sometimes waiting.
Illinois Senate seat.
Christian, if you want a good Christian Democrat who can speak to his faith, go get Raphael Warnock.
I like Raphael Warnock.
Yeah.
We're getting Lauren Egan's going to come on here in a minute. Let me just peek up here at the latest on the numbers. We're still Ken Paxton's closing the gap a little bit with Cornyn, so that's something that we'll monitor. Talrigo's expanding.
Do you have a rooting interest in the Cornyn Paxton race?
Yes, Paxton. This is
a change for you.
It is.
This is back to 2016. Boy, that's a well. Cook. I want to hear you.
So. Look, I think that this is the only way a Democrat wins this seat is if Ken Paxton is the nominee. And I would like a Democrat to win the seat. And I think I have made this case now. I think one of the big shifts for me was there was a period of time when what you needed were sort of reasonable Republicans to stand up to Trump during the first term. Right. And so I was like, yeah, we should be trying to elect sensible, sane Republicans, but they all got run out of the party, like out on a rail. And at this point, the moderate Republicans, Susan Collins, and not even just like establishment Republicans, like old school Republicans, not only do they not stand up to Trump, but they do a tepid currying favor of Trump. Like Cornyn has done his best to butch up, like he did an ad where he's like reading The Art of the Deal. And I would rather the Republican Party just show people who they are. They are hypocrites. And I, but you know, I think this now, but like, I think it, you should, they should be who they are. And Ken Paxton perfectly reflects what Republicans want.
Accelerationist Sarah is the best Sarah.
This is not an accelerationist. This is
what
a,
was, what is Cornyn better on? That's the thing I come down to. It was like, show me something that John Cornyn has voted on that was very meaningful that Ken Paxton wouldn't have to contain Trump. He hasn't. So fuck him.
Well, and this is, I would say this speaks to something you have said many times, Tim, which is that maybe if the grownups hadn't been in the room and Trump won, we wouldn't have had Trump too. Right? Like all of the people were like, well, I got to be in the room to stop the worst stuff and I'll take the really crazy shit off his desk. Maybe if they hadn't done that and we could have just had the real full Trump and Trump won, we wouldn't have be here now.
Maybe. We saw plenty of full Trump. I mean, he tried to overthrow the election.
he had a lot of crazy ideas that he didn't get to execute on, but you know, sure. Fair enough.
And
it's a weaker argument now that he got elected after January 6th, I will say.
Yeah, this is just, there remains a theory out there that like you should be protecting what's-his-futs, who he voted to impeach Trump, but then he said, Cassidy, right? Like, oh, we should protect him from a tough Republican primary because the other person's going to be more MAGA. And you're like, what's the difference? What's the difference between Cassidy and this other person? Now, you can look backwards and say Cassidy was willing to impeach him. But if you look at everything since then, Cassidy has done everything Trump wants in order to try to win this election. And I would rather just dispense with the farce, dispense with the kayfabe, as JVL would say.
I want to,
before you go,
speaking of Schadenfreude,
you know what? Go ahead. You say it because we're going to say the same thing.
I have a moment. I'm just going to sit here.
They call him Crenshaw?
No, I haven't called it yet, but Mr. Toth is beating Dan, and I'm not going to comment on any of how Dan looks. So I'm just going to enjoy it. Mr. Toth is beating Dan Crenshaw by 20 points with 60% in. So not called yet, but things are not looking great for old Danny C. Could somebody find me on the producer side? There's a sad video of Dan Crenshaw. He used to act like he was an independent Republican. This is right in line with what Sarah was just talking about. And when he decided to throw all in with Trump, he was at like a TPUSA event, and he was sitting down in the front row, like screaming, like, Mr. Trump, please sign my... please sign my boobs. Like he was shouting at him. It was very sad. Let's do a low light reel of Dan Crenshaw, if we could effort that. Let's bring in Lauren Egan while we try to find some of the most embarrassing moments of Dan Crenshaw. Maybe a highlight reel of the time me and Dan Crenshaw debated each other. Maybe should we watch me? Should we watch highlight reel of me? I don't know. We'll see how things go. Lauren, what I want to get your take on this Democratic Senate race. Things looking good for Tallarico. I had mentioned kind of him going into the lion's den as something that that separated him and draw a lot of attention to him doing Rogan and Fox. Also, his social media game, though, has been pretty legit. Why don't you kind of talk about what you think explains how Tallarico's positioned himself?
Yeah, he was kind of a no-name person. I mean, just a few months ago, I remember the first, I think like a year ago, Sam and I were slacking about like, how do we pronounce this guy's name? And now everyone knows him. But he really started to catch people's attention off of his TikTok and Instagram. When we're talking about the attention economy, he's kind of one of these early Democrats who really demonstrated that he knew how to master it. He went viral a lot for his speeches on the House floor, especially in his opposition to the school voucher movement in Texas. And I think what's interesting about his social media stuff, I mean, it's kind of different from what we've seen with Mom Donnie. It's not super gimmicky. There's not like a halal cart involved or things like that. It's oftentimes him speaking from the state house, oftentimes him talking about scripture, talking about his faith and how he relates it to politics. And it just really took off. He has millions of followers on TikTok and Instagram, and someone ended up sending one of his TikToks to Joe Rogan, like one of Joe Rogan's friends. It was basically like, hey, you got to have this guy on your show. So long story short, Tallarico goes on the Joe Rogan show last summer, and that's kind of what kickstarted his whole campaign. He announced he was running for Senate just a couple weeks after that.
Talk to us about how seriously the Democrats are taking this. I'm looking at the prediction markets here, there's no sense overreacting to that, but it's a data point. And tonight, as these results are coming in, you see Texas Senate winner, Republican or Democrat. The Republican number has gone, you know, from like 80% down to 65. Like, you start to see the red line going down, the blue line going up, as it looks possible that it's a Tallarico versus Paxton race. Is this like a social media buzz thing? A lot of us like to talk about it, but the actual DSC, the Democratic campaign folks, are more interested in other states, or do they think it's real?
It's not. I think they think it's real. It's not on the top tier list of states. This was, I mean, when Schumer and the DSCC were laying out their top tier, the states that they had to win, this was not on it. When I talked to Schumer a couple of weeks ago about Texas, he basically said, well, we're going to wait and see what happens in the primary. We'll make our decision about how much we want to get involved and how much money we want to put into the state until we see who these winners are. Obviously, they were watching to see who the Republican winner was and the Democratic nominee as well. I think that if this ends up being a Paxton-Tallarico race, which it's early signs indicate that that's potentially where we're headed, Democrats are going to feel a lot more bullish about this race. But we say this every cycle, this is still a really hard state for Democrats to win in. So I think the difficult thing for the party now is they're going to have to decide just how much do they actually throw into the state and invest, when their path back to the Senate has to include places like Ohio, potentially Iowa, Alaska, North Carolina, and then Texas is really on that like B list of states.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio and Texas could end up flopping. I don't know. Sarah, I wanted to get you to chime in just on the Democratic wave thing and these random races. There's also Arkansas tonight. It's a random House district. It's north of Little Rock. But in the election in 24, the Republican won narrowly in this kind of Little Rock suburb, 51-49. Special election right now, the Democrat is schlonging the Republican like 63-36, and they're about to call it. So, you know, just things like that. Like, that's just whatever. And it's just an Arkansas House special, but a 30-point swing is in line with kind of the stuff we've been seeing.
Yeah, and I think Republicans have noticed this, right? They've noticed that in every special election, one race, I think it was DeSantis who came out and said, hey, I think we should be worried about this. We're seeing 15, 20, 30-point swings in every single special election. And it speaks to two things. One, increased Democratic enthusiasm, and two, decreased Republican enthusiasm. And I think it's worth just making this point every time we talk about the midterms. But the fact that Republicans have... Sorry, somebody else go. I just lost my train of thought. I have to come back to it. Lauren, you go. The chat.
Lauren.
I look at the chat.
Why are you looking at the chat? Live streaming to the professional.
I'm going
to
turn it off.
You're somebody, a focus grouper.
There's too many things.
You're a pundit. I'm live streaming.
No, sorry. I got it back. Sorry. It's that the people who are turning out in the midterms, right, are the low propensity voters who vote for Donald Trump are not midterm voters. Sorry. That is just the big overarching thing we want to say every single time, that Democrats now have a structural advantage in off years that Republicans used to have but no longer do.
We were mentioning the TikTok still at live, and we wanted to trigger Sarah a little bit on this one. So there was an issue that James Tallarico got a lot of momentum on that is, I think, maybe contra Sarah's priors. That's good. We like to be honest about our views around here, maybe even counter JVL's. Let's watch it. It's James Tallarico. It's one of his first viral videos on TikTok.
Just like any scam, vouchers may sound good, but once you dig into the details, you realize they're ripping you off. A voucher is any program that takes our hard-earned tax dollars out of our underfunded public schools and gives them to unaccountable private schools. It's not a popular idea, and that's why voucher proponents have had to come up with a bunch of new slogans to sell their scam. Let's walk through each one. First, vouchers
let's not.
Are
great.
Not
you get the gist. You get the gist. 1.1 million views. Another thing he's been hitting on is talking about the tops versus the bottoms. It's kind of different than how we discuss it at Oz in the Fruit Loop in New Orleans.
I was gonna ask about that, Tim.
yeah, but he's talking about the income bracket, okay? Not anything sexual. So get your head out of the gutter. But he has, I think, incorporated a lot of like the populist left economic stuff into, you know, more of that kind of moderate cultural attitude. And is that, I mean, and that's basically whatever. I mean, everybody's doing that now at some level, but I think he's really done a good job of focusing on it. And I think that he separated himself from Jasmine on that focus. I don't know, Lauren, if that feels right to you.
Yeah. I mean, this race is so interesting because it's hard to like put any of them into boxes. There's a lot of cross-cutting dynamics on him moderating culturally. I mean, in some ways, yes, because I think you guys mentioned this earlier. He talks about religion, and it's so central to who he is that he kind of codes as a bit moderate, but he's really not on things like abortion. He kind of got criticized early on in the primary. Do you guys remember Terry Virt? He was running in this primary.
I like Terry Virt. Astronaut. He's in a primary tonight. Let's check in on Terry. You keep talking.
He's in the House race now. Yeah, but he was in the Senate race and he dropped out, but he released an attack ad basically on Tallarico, pulled up some of his old floor speeches that he made saying that God is non-binary, that there are six genders or something like that. And you can understand what Tallarico might have been trying to say intellectually, but Terry Virt's whole thing was Tallarico's actually too far left. He's too progressive for a state that's as red and moderate or red and conservative as Texas. So that's what I think is kind of fascinating about this race is Coase is moderate, but he's really not. And you can't put any of them in like neat ideological boxes at all.
One other Democratic race we've not mentioned tonight, which gained a little bit of interest because of the way that he inserted himself into the Senate race, is the House District, I believe it's 33 in the Dallas suburbs. I think it's the district that George W. Bush lives in. And that's Colin Allred and Julie Johnson. And that's two, because of this redistricting nonsense, two Democrats got thrown in together. I think the initial thinking, I think, was that Allred was going to be a favorite there. But he, like, in a very weird way, like, inserted himself into the Tallarico Crockett feud in a way that I think bugged a lot of people. Nothing there yet because that is in Dallas. So we'll see in about 20 minutes start to get some numbers out of there. But what are the Democratic whispers on that race? Anything, Lauren or Sarah, you guys hearing anything on that race?
I think people were feeling pretty down on Allred going into this, which is interesting just how much his sort of stock in the party has plummeted in the past couple of weeks. I mean, after a lot of that, his whole back and forth with Tallarico and the Crockett campaign, that was when there was an influencer in Texas who basically accused Tallarico of saying that Allred was a mediocre black man, and it created this whole identity conversation. She kind of misrepresented what Tallarico was saying. He was trying to say that Allred was running a mediocre campaign, which I think is a fair statement to make considering he's no longer in the Senate race. And Crockett and Allred, I think, kind of cynically tried to paint Tallarico as being racist in this race. And I think that kind of backfired in some ways. I don't think that that was really taken very well in some corners of the party. And you saw some folks kind of come out and endorse Johnson in these past couple weeks.
Interesting. We'll watch that. Jay DiBaggio says that Tallarico is a white Barack Hussein Obama. You got any takes on that? That would go to my theory that you win and you run. I want to revisit this. I know that people would not want him to leave the Texas Senate seat, but the Democrats do not have a front runner. If somebody won Texas, it might be the momentum might be too hard to stop. I kind of feel that way about Plantner in Maine. The field is not lighting anybody on fire.
JVL.
The field is not lighting anybody on fire. That's all.
It's 9:40 on March 3, and Tim is taking two guys who haven't won their primaries yet and protecting them out to.
Also,
Tallarico ballot.
I'm saying there's going to be a buzz candidate. It's going to come from somewhere.
Not going to be the guy with the Nazi tattoo. He might be able to pull it out in Maine, but I don't think that's going to be the Democratic
runner. I don't know about that, Sarah. I don't know about that.
Okay, can I just say Julie Johnson?
Yeah.
Part of the lesbian phone tree. Know her, like her. She's going to be great.
What happens on the lesbian phone tree? Is that like, do you share notes on scissoring or like,
no? You can just find any lesbian. So like, if you have like a core group, from there you can find anyone. Like JVL said, Sarah, I need to find Allison Bechdel. And what happened?
5 minutes.
Boom. Anne asks how happy I am the Crenshaw might lose. I do. I'm hoping that.
No, it's been called. Tim, it's been called.
It's over?
Wasserman called it.
Dave Wasserman has called it?
Wasserman has called it.
Are you sure? I need to see it myself. Do we have a sound effect?
Steve Toth defeats Representative Dan Crenshaw in the Texas 02 GOP primary.
Bring me a high noon. I'm texting downstairs. I'm going to have a victory cocktail.
Let me tell you what.
That's a little more. Let me break, Dan Crenshaw.
Redistricting last year did Crenshaw no favors. So Crenshaw got fucked by his own Texas State Republican Party.
Well, that's a shame.
First of all, that's the kind of smoke people deserve for them starting this. They set off that whole arms race on that. But Crenshaw is a perfect example of this like Cornyn phenomenon that I was talking about. It is somebody who does not like Donald Trump, does not like MAGA. It's not who he was. It's not who he wanted to be when he got into politics. But he made his accommodations and he wound up in the sour spot with voters where he's not MAGA enough for the people who really want MAGA. And he's not sincere or like able to own his space enough to bring over Dem voters or build a big coalition. Bye-bye, Dan Crenshaw. You were one of the people who did all the accommodating, and this is where it got you.
Somebody's phone's buzzing on their desk. I'm waiting for my victory drink. Luckily, I think that there's some viewers of this live stream downstairs at my house. Nice to live stream at your
house. I need to ask a question of Lauren.
Yeah.
Because she's still relatively new here.
I don't know their announcement, but sure.
Lauren, what what feels better, seeing a good candidate win or seeing a terrible candidate lose? There's only one right answer to this.
Whoa, only one right answer. For me personally, it's seeing a terrible candidate lose.
Yes, that's my
goal. It's really satisfying. Mm-hmm. It's really satisfying. But that does speak, I think, to the cynicism of our time. I do think people would have had a different answer about that in 2008. And that does make me kind of sad. Well, good riddance, old Dan Crenshaw. The other announcement is that it seems like we don't really have a call on the Republican side of the Texas race, but we have a call that it will go to a runoff. I still think it's pretty relevant whether Ken Paxton can pick up enough ground here to pass Cornyn. There's just something, yes. I don't know, there's something vibes-ish about winning the first round. It doesn't guarantee anything in the second round of a primary, but especially in a race like this, it's basically a head-to-head and you have a third candidate. It's like kind of different if there's a coalition, but I think that's meaningful.
What is Hunt? Is Hunt to the right of ever of these guys?
Wesley Hunt is a typical kind of MAGA.
So, that's nice.
Good riddance, Dan Crenshaw. Tough break. We'll see you on the podcast charts where you'll be losing again.
Was Tyler listening to the show? Was he listening to the show and heard you call for it?
Yeah.
If anybody's listening, I would like a drink.
Gary's on his way over to your house right now, Sarah.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Here's the thing about Hunt. He was actually kind of a normal guy. Like a normie Republican until he decided he needed to get into this race and he became a super MAGA, like I love Trump. Like he just went, and it gave him just enough juice to force these other two into a runoff, which I gotta say, there is also something that you can take pleasure from here, which is not only has Cornyn already spent more on this Republican primary than basically any other Republican in the history of Republican Senate primaries, now Republican donors have to fund a runoff.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money for Republicans to have to spend in a primary and then a runoff, probably for Ken Paxton to win. And then
do it all over again.
Yeah, do it all over again.
Cornyn spent, I believe, $69 million in the primary on TV, which is a hell of a lot. And they got a couple more months now. And I think they will feel like they'll have to fund him, you know, because making the bet, I guess, that you save money on the back end in theory, not having to try to bail out Paxton, because these guys will all bail out Paxton because they have no morals. But it is definitely wasted resources. And a lot of the MAGA Republicans have noticed this. I've seen this in my feed. They're getting hit from both sides. Where like MAGA Republicans are like, why are you wasting our money to save this desiccated old guy? Like, why shouldn't we be spending it in these other states with candidates that we like?
Can I ask you a leading question?
Aren't most of your questions leading?
I mean, who can say? So you had said, you know, what is the difference between John Cornyn and Ken Paxton, right? They'd be the same. Name and vote. But if we switch it around and look at it from the point of view of a Republican voter in Texas, what is the reason you would prefer Ken Paxton, a guy who should probably be in jail, who is a serial adulterer, who would vote no differently than this other guy, John Cornyn, who is a respectable person who you voted for five times already and who also votes all the ways you want him to vote? Sarah?
He's a fighter. And he's more MAGA. They think that John Cornyn is a phony, elitist establishment Republican rhino. And they see all of his overtures in trying to, like, put on a cowboy hat. Like, they think he's a fake. And they think Ken Paxton. Yeah, right. No, that's true. He's part of an old guard Republican party that everybody was fine with back in the day. But now they want a MAGA fighter. And when you try to tell people who want a MAGA fighter, hey, this guy's had a lot of affairs and he's corrupt, they're like, that guy, that's just like the other guy I really like. Like, they're not turned off by that.
I also, this always takes me back. I want to add another thing to that answer, to my favorite Sarah focus group ever, which was of Republican voters, I believe, in Georgia, Florida, Alabama. I kind of forget why you picked those three, but we're going through various races. And the voters, the MAGA voters, we were talking about the House candidates, and they were talking about in Congress, the people they like that are really getting shit done are Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene. This is a few years ago now. And they didn't know what the policies were that they passed, but they just see them out there owning the lips. And then when they start, and then when we moved on to ask about the governor's race and stuff, you know, they're like, I kind of like Brian Kemp better than whoever the MAGA was running at the time, because our schools are getting better and I care about the road, right? Like, I do think that a lot of voters do look at Congress as like your job, MAGA voters in particular, your job is to make libs cry, like, to vote for crazy shit, you know, make a scene, make me feel good. And Ken Paxton can deliver that for him. I have a question. I want to get Lauren in on this. I want to go around the horn about a Tallarico thing. Bill Kristol. Bill, if you want to jump on here, please jump on. Bill's messaging us in this. Like, he's one of the commenters, Bill Kristol. And he pointed out, jump on here if you want, Bill. We'd love to see you. That Bernie Sanders, in the Bernie Sanders counties near Austin, kind of the hill country and like the Austin burbs, Tallarico's putting up huge numbers in the Bernie Sanders counties. And this kind of goes to the conversation we were having earlier, thinking about what might work for Tallarico. And it is what I'm calling the inverse of the Kamala paradox. Is it the Kamala paradox? I'm trying to brand it. Sarah, you're good at branding these things, like the Triangle of Doom. It's the Kamala something.
Yeah, the Kamala conundrum.
It's the Kamala conundrum, which is that lefty Bernie voters thought that she was a corporate shill. And centrist corporate shill voters thought that she was a California lefty.
Yeah.
And so she was in the sour spot. And I do think that Tallarico has a chance. And looking ahead to future Democratic primaries, I feel like the ones that are going to succeed are the ones that, like, the Bernie voters look at them like, yeah, he's not quite Bernie enough for me, but I like that cut of that guy or gal's jib. And the moderate voters are like, a little lefty for me on some things, but I like whatever, you know, what something else about them. And Tallarico has seemed to figure that out. I don't know. Go ahead, then Lauren.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a strategist who's kind of in the moderate wing of the party the other day, and we were talking about populism and what role it should play in the party. And I was kind of surprised because he was like, yeah, we fully recognize that the nominee in 2028 needs to be someone who embraces populism, which was interesting because, again, this person, fairly moderate, very much mainstream centrist wing of the party. And I think Tallarico absolutely did that. Like it's been interesting. He's not really gone after Trump a whole lot in his campaign. He did, he filmed like a little ad at the Texas State Fair a couple of weeks ago, noting that like fried Oreos and all these things are so much more expensive because of tariffs. He never said Trump's name. He just talked about tariffs. So his whole thing really is not about punching Trump or punching the Republican Party. It's all billionaires versus us.
Sarah, what do you have on that?
The only thing I was going to say is that when you talk about the Kamala conundrum, a lot of that comes from her not being able to cut like a really clear picture of who she was. Like I remember listening to voters talk about Kamala Harris all the time, and their big complaint wasn't even too liberal or too moderate so much as, I don't know what she stands for. I don't know who she is. And I think with Tallarico, even if it's when you do the faith thing, like if you've got something that's clear for voters to grab onto so that they're like, I know that person. I know what they're about. Like I get their vibe. Just something that really stands out to them and is sticky. Like that's a big piece of it, just so they can locate you. They didn't feel like they could locate Kamala Harris in terms of who she was.
Okay, we've got a little bit of bad news and a little bit of good news. The bad news is the ShamWow guy currently in sixth place in his primary challenge against some MAGA person I've never heard of, John Carter. So that's too bad. Kind of interesting in an Arkansas race I wanted to flag. Another one is there's a Supreme Court seat there, kind of like the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's one of these nonpartisan things, but it's really partisan, where the incumbent is this, like, you know, person that believes that Earth is 800 years old or whatever, and that the dinosaurs and ladies live together. And then there is like kind of an activist other candidate who went against book bans. And it's Arkansas. And the conservative guy's winning, Bronny, 52-48 over Adams. But again, it's just kind of like those things are eyebrow raising. You know, there was the Ryan Zinke dropped out in Montana this week. I think, Lauren, you're going to talk with Ryan Bussey later this week about that race. He's running for Congress. It's like, you know, he only won by 12 last time, this Republican, MAGA Republican guy in Montana. And if an Arkansas Supreme Court race is 4 points, the field does start to open up a little bit for the Democrats. Are we ready for some Schadenfreude?
Yes.
All right. I asked for the video of Dan Crenshaw sucking up to Donald Trump. Let's take a look at that. Let's pull that up. Look at Dan. Where is he? We love you, Trump. Oh, yeah. Oh, we got to come up on stage. Oh, yeah. There it is. Can I get a signature? Oh yeah, thank you, thank you, sir. Lick the boot, Dan. That's too bad. I thought was supposed to be a normal one.
I said this better be good, Dan. That took a long time. I said, Dan, what the hell is it? He said, it's a no vote on impeachment day. That was a no vote. Okay.
No vote on impeachment. No vote on Dan Crenshaw. That's enough. See you later, Dan.
It's been real.
We can't enjoy Dan Crenshaw losing in a primary to a MAGA Republican. What can you enjoy in this world, you know?
Do you remember when he made that ad where he was in a really tight bodysuit and he dropped himself through a window?
He was in the
Matrix or something. Yeah. That was embarrassing, too.
He's an action figure. It's great. This is a delicacy.
Oh, wait, we have another? Let's keep doing it. We have another. We have a highlight reel. We have, this is when me and Dan were debating on Piers Crenshaw. It's kind of, we need the music from like the Oscars, like when somebody dies. You need like that.
Here's the thing. Congressman Crenshaw wants your audience to think that the Republican Party right now is the same as it was in 2017, and that the Donald Trump administration will be the same as it was when he brought in a bunch of traditional Republicans to be around him in his cabinet and to work in his staff. And I'm sorry, that's just an imaginary world that the congressman wants to live in to feel comfortable. Because what the world we live in now is all those people. No, I'm sorry, Piers, let me finish. All those people are gone now. And at the RNC at the box, the people around Trump,
who else is
are
gone
Matt
now?
Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Tucker Carlson. That Tucker guy had a prominent spot to speak at the convention. Congressman Crenshaw did not. This new party is a nativist party that's going to be about mass deportations and tariffs and revenge on Donald Trump's enemies. If you don't believe me, listen to what Donald Trump says. And I just want to know why Congressman Crenshaw thinks that he understands where the party is better than Trump's own vice president, Mike Pence, who assesses this and says, no, this is not someone we can trust. Why does Congressman Crenshaw think that he knows better than Mike Pence about Good Donald question. Trump's character and what kind of policies he would?
I was cooking. Dan didn't know.
You look so young. What year was that?
Fuck you. You are the one aging me. You're making me sit here for hours watching the news.
Yep.
I need a cigarette after that.
I might go get a cigarette actually.
Can we send him something? Can we send him, to his office? Could we send him an edible arrangements? Love the Bulwark.
No, we could send him some soul edibles. Let me tell you, we won't have a clip of this, but you know what else Dan Crenshaw did?
Is it me doing something good?
No. Oh. He threw Liz Cheney under the bus really hard. Yeah. Like, they were the same. They were like, had the same views. Like, she was in leadership. And then he came out hard against her in her primary. And I hope that Liz Cheney sends him a little note.
Hope she's happy tonight. We in about 3 minutes, we're going to be getting some Dallas numbers in. And I think that once we get the Dallas numbers in, we'll probably get a call on the Texas, on the Democratic side of the Senate race. And we'll know a little bit about that. Colin Allred, Julie Johnson, lesbian on football player battle. So we'll keep an eye on that. Lauren, were you monitoring this Valerie Fushi race at all over in North Carolina?
It felt in like North kind Carolina.
Of this, yeah.
Yeah, the 4th district. Yeah. I don't know if we have, if that's been called
yet. It looks
yet.
Like Valerie's going to win, but it's not over yet. They haven't called it.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that was an interesting primary. This was, I believe, a rematch, I think, in this primary. Basically, Fushi is, I think she's almost 70. She's the incumbent, and she was getting a challenge from the Durham County Commissioner, Nida Alam. Alam's young, she's in her early 30s, endorsed by Sanders and Justice Democrats and David Hogg's groups and sort of that cohort. And this race, I think, was a lot. It was a generational sort of test, a bit of whether or not there's going to be a Democratic Tea Party. Alam was really painting her opponent as kind of backed a corporate Democrat, almost backed by AIPAC, in bed with AI industry, things like that. So I'm interested if Fushi kind of holds on. She's one of these older Democrats who's been criticized for not really, you know, kind of being asleep at the wheel sometimes, you know, taking forever to come out and say something against Trump's actions in Iran. So I don't know. It's hard to like read too much into any one race about what other incumbents can expect, but an early interesting test.
This is an interesting race I haven't been following. The Texas Attorney General race. And Chip Roy, I once wrote an article about Chip Roy where I called him a cowardly goldfish.
Goldfish.
I'm the cowardly goldfish now because I kind of forget what I was mad at him about. But what I remember clearly, I'm still living in Oakland, so I thought I bet I looked really young during this phone call as well, Sarah. And he called me and like yelled at me for an hour. This was like when the Bulwark was just starting, when Republicans, like before they'd given up on me. They haven't given up on some of the other ones, but before all these guys that I used to work with had given up on me. And so he called me to scream at me. that yell at me and about how, like, it's important to still have good Republicans in here. Tim, why are you coming after me? I still care about spending. And I went against Donald Trump on impeachment. And anyway, he left Congress to run for attorney general, and he's running against a guy named Mays Middleton. I know nothing about Mays Middleton, but if we could pull his picture up on the screen, that would be nice. We pull up a picture of Mays Middleton. Look at this guy. It's going to be a second, but here we go. No, there's some better ones. Let's keep going. Let's keep looking. Let's keep looking. Let's find his headshot. Let's find a headshot of Mays Middleton. Anyway, well, while we effort that, he is he's winning 43-29.
Oh.
Over Chip Roy. Chip Roy left Congress to run for Texas Attorney General, and he is getting beat pretty handily by a fella named Mays Middleton. That's tough. A member of the Texas Senate, 11th District.
You know,
he looks like a goober.
Part of why that's interesting is it's the same
picture. The same picture. There he is. There we go. That man right there. That man is beating Chip Roy like a drum right now.
That is an alpha war fighter if I've ever seen one.
It's a fighter. He's crushing Chip Roy in the Texas Attorney General race. That's something.
If you put a little hat on him, he looks like he could be working in the Santa's workshop, building little
bone smashing.
I think he's ever frame mogged anybody in his whole life.
I think he has been bone smashing. Mays might be the attorney general now. That is something else. Tough break for Chip Roy and Dan Crenshaw. Crenshaw and Florida.
Do you guys think you're going to get any more Republican retirements in the next 2 weeks after tonight's? Like, as people start looking through, again, all the weird races, just places where it's a 30-point swing and stuff like that, are more, because I assume this is why Chip Roy didn't run. And why
I don't know in the next 2 weeks, but I think you're going to continue to see Republican retirements. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people heading for the hills. I think we've seen a lot already, but I don't think we finished. I think with Chip Roy, you know, Chip Roy's one of those people who frequently doesn't vote for the Speaker of the House or doesn't vote to pass a spending bill. And I don't know that his principled conservatism is very welcome anymore. I think people want somebody who's just going to support Trump's agenda and keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, here was Chip after around January 6th. I was writing about this. Trump deserves universal condemnation for what was clearly impeachable conduct. Chip came around like they all did, and the people just didn't believe it. So we got Tallarico up by 8 here with about half the vote in. We're waiting on Dallas, and I think that is going to be pretty telling. I'll start to peek at you. If you guys have questions for us, did I say San Antonio was West Texas? Somebody's telling me I didn't. I meant it's west of Austin. I'm aware that San Antonio is not West Texas. I watch Landman, okay? I watch Landman. I know what's at. I know where West Texas is.
Lauren, did you know that James Tallarico is not Hispanic?
Yes. Although I believe Tallarico, his ancestors.
Gabagool.
I'm just saying.
From Mexico.
Tallarico rhymes so with Puerto Rico.
It.
Does it?
No. I think it did benefit Tallarico a lot. Like, it's weird in these Texas races, there usually is like a spoiler Hispanic candidate from the Rio Grande Valley, like Hidalgo County or something, and that didn't happen this time. So Tallarico's really running up the score down there. I'm just looking at this Latino these voters, numbers right now. Like, crushing. Cameron County is Brownsville, 63-34, Webb County, 65-31. Tallarico is really running up the score with the Hispanics. We'll take a look at your questions as we listen. Isn't Tallarico?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Is it south of Austin? San Antonio is south and west of Austin. Is it not? Am I crazy? Am I losing my mind?
I don't know. This is a fun geography question, but
I think so.
Lauren.
Yes.
Do you know? So I don't need you to be Steve Kornacki here, but if Steve Kornacki was here, he would be trying to tell us how many votes are in Dallas that are possible and whether or not that would be enough to overcome the current 8-point gap that currently exists between Crockett and Tallarico. Now, I don't know how many votes are there, but I
312,000 votes are in Dallas.
Just in the Democrats?
I'm not wearing khakis, but I'll there be you go. Your...
That I mean that's yeah. that's obviously Crockett's home base. I don't know if there's enough where she could conceivably
her lead right now. Point, we'll tell but... you this: James Tallarico leads by 100,000 votes right now. They're at 300,000 okay. votes in Dallas. You guys can do the math, or you can just look at Dave Wasserman.
But we only have half the voters. So
Dave okay. Wasserman of Redistrict, he's seen enough. James Tallarico wins the Texas Senate Democratic primary.
There you go.
We'll head on to a general election against either John Cornyn or Ken Paxton. One of the big concerns that a lot of people have, Lauren, I want to ask you about this and we can let you pop if you want to, about a general election with Tallarico is that it got kind of nasty with Crockett. And there are some folks out there making the case that Tallarico is going to have trouble turning out black voters in Texas. Now, Texas isn't Georgia. You know, the percentage of the black vote is not as great as it is in some of these other states. The raw number, there's a ton of black voters in Texas, like the second or third most in any state. But what's your sense of that? Like is that kind of be priority number one for him? Or like, what are people saying about, and what had Tallarico been saying about how he's going to try to motivate black voters after kind of a contentious primary with Crockett?
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the main things right out the gate that he's going to have to focus on. I mean, his strategy here was clearly he knew that Crockett was going to win the black vote by a lot. So his play here was to run up the score with white voters and Latino voters. Not to say that he didn't go into some black areas and campaign there, but that was not his primary focus in this primary race. So that's going to be a major thing that he's going to have to work on coming out of this primary. Crockett, I will say, has a role to play there, and that is going to be interesting. I think before tonight, it was very clear that Tallarico was a bit more of a team player. I mean, he made very clear to his supporters that if Crockett wins, we are all going to go knock doors. We are going to help her win this race. And then Crockett's campaign put out a statement basically saying, like, we'll support whoever wins. But it didn't come from her. You know, there's just like a different level of sort of commitment that you felt from the two of them. So I'm curious to see what she does coming out of this and how much yeah. she kind of helps to drive that.
Mr. Obama's been on the sidelines and, you know, not done a lot, but he has popped out in campaign season from time to time. And I know that he and Tallarico have talked, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was called in to help with that. All right, Lauren, you got any other final thoughts for us? You want to pop off? Then we'll just kind of go around the horn and close things down, the three of us.
Sounds great. Thanks, right, guys.
We'll look to your guys' questions. If you guys have any questions, thoughts here before we let you all go. The Arkansas Supreme Court race, just one of the things I just want to mention. It does look like the Christian nationalist guy is going to win there. But the Democratic aligned person is overperforming Kamala in Arkansas by 52 points right now. And so I just, you know, again, off year, whatever, like special election, but primary night. But I just can you continue the positives for me, the positive takeaways, and we'll get kind of go around on takeaways and go to questions. Is Dan Crenshaw bites the dust. See you later, Dan. Democrats do continue to overperform in these specials, and the Texas Senate race is, you know, nobody's getting counting their chickens on it, but it feels more in play than it did an hour ago for the Democrats.
Yes. And I saw a question in the chat that I think is a good one, which is it was asking, where do the Hunt voters go? Right. Because this is the question. So right now in this, Cornyn is up by about 2 points over Ken Paxton. But I believe Wesley Hunt has like 12 points. So that's a lot. Right. That's a big chunk that he got as a third candidate. And I think Hunt's people go to Paxton.
Feels like it, right?
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, Hunt ran as like the ultra MAGA guy, even though I don't think that's quite who he is. And he's a young black guy. And so I think that these are voters in Texas who are like, I want something new and different. And I don't think that the new and different crowd goes back to Cornyn.
Well,
I think
the incumbent, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you have two challengers and an incumbent. What are the chances that the challengers' voters are going to say, oh, actually, I really want the same?
Yeah.
Al Green mentioned that. I just want to bring that in one more time because just interesting the generational change side of this. Christian Menefee is a young guy to watch, handsome guy. He seems to be like, looks like he's going to be winning that primary over Al Green. Hasn't been called yet, but he's up by 6 points. JBL, do you have any other final thoughts before we take some questions and get out of here?
Yeah, I do. There's a YouGov poll out today showing that Trump's strong disapproved number is now 51%. His overall approval is down to 38%. This starts to look,
say
God
it,
help
Tim.
Us. It starts to look like things could really, like the bottom could fall out, right? We could go down to 35.
Bush line.
I'm just saying, I mean, nothing. If you look around and say, so what are the things that get better for him? I mean, I guess he could stop warring. He could stop doing his war. He could stop doing tariffs, but I don't know. I don't want to be too
optimistic. JBL. Wow.
Yeah. Love that. I have just one other little tidbit, which is, Kamala Harris endorsed Crockett, which was
one of the questions. Jesse said that which endorsement was worse, Trump for Herschel Walker or Kamala for Jasmine Crockett?
Trump for Herschel Walker was Jasmine Crockett both was not an abuser who played Russian roulette all the time, psychopath. But I do think it was a tough one for Kamala to jump in and try to test her ability to move voters. Because it didn't work out that way.
But what if she didn't do it as ability to test voters? What if she did it as like, hey, Jasmine Crockett is a black woman trying to do something historic, and
that's fine. That's fine. But hold on. The question is not whether you respect it or whether, because her reasons can be perfectly good. It's more of it means like Trump could endorse somebody and pull them over the finish line, no problem. And so it is a test of her juice with voters.
Here's another thing. It's just a test of political skill. Zero juice, but also political skill. And let me say this. I like Kamala, personally. I've got to meet her a few times. I like her. To make this even, Stephen, we're ripping on Jeb today on the TNL for his comment on Iran. I liked Jeb. Jeb didn't really have any juice. Like Jeb's political skills were not that great. He was a good governor. He wasn't politically that strong, and his instincts weren't that great politically on a national scale. And we've now seen from Kamala, like a primary campaign that was bad. Some bad political instincts as VP. I think some bad ones in the post campaign choices. And this race, it's like, going back to that sour spot, the Kamala conundrum, it's like, it was kind of a half-C endorsement, right? She did a auto-dial for her or something, a phone call that went to people's houses. So it was like, not enough to really help her, to help Crockett, but enough to annoy people that were on Tallarico's side, right? And so it's like, well, what was the point of doing that? It showed, I think, a lack of political judgment that we've seen in a couple of other cases with her. So anyway, not a huge deal, but not particularly savvy endorsement.
Hey, we have breaking news here, I think.
Okay.
Jared Polis just pardoned Tina Peters?
Oh, fuck. Did we have to do this live? You have to come at me with Jeb and Jared Polis in the same day.
I'm sorry. I thought this was a live cast of the news. We're gonna break that. Hold this. I'm going to try to confirm. Really? You talk, Tim.
Okay. I'm going to answer one of these questions because I have an answer to this. Odie Tavish, I think. A.D. Tavish asked, now, are any of these races worth donating to, or do we want to wait to help out smaller down-ballot candidates later? I'm going to work on this project. It is coming soon, where I'm going to highlight some races that I think are super interesting to donate to if you're so inclined. And the races that I think are the where you get the most bang for your buck are going into red states and districts where there isn't already going to be a ton of funding. So I kind of think Tallarico is going to be pretty well funded. I don't think that's a waste of money, but the races I'm looking at, Mary Peltola, Alaska, making sure she's really well funded, I think is going to be important for the Democrats. And I don't know if that's going to be as high a priority from the big ticket donors. Maybe the Iowa and Kansas Senate races. Let's see how those shake out. I think those are also stretch races that Democrats are almost as likely to win as Texas, but won't have as much attention on them. And then a whole bunch of House districts. I mentioned that Montana House race earlier. Ryan Bussey's a really good candidate, former gun rights advocate. He's kind of like the Sarah of gun rights. You know, he's flipped and seen things from the inside, and it's still an active gun owner and user, but wants to see reforms but is really in step with Montana. 12-point race, as I mentioned earlier, like that's something. So I'll put together a list for people coming up here in the next few weeks. But yeah,
don't donate yet. We will talk a lot about these things.
Yeah.
Fact check, Polis has not yet pardoned Tina Peters. He simply put out a tweet saying that here a Democrat has been just given probation for a thing which is just as serious as what Tina Peters did. And he really has to look forward to the equal application of the laws. That's what he's thinking about right now. So he's going to pardon Tina Peters.
Well, don't make me text Jared Polis right now. I'm enjoying myself. Don't do it, Jared. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Guys,
he's not going to listen to me.
Let's just do a quick recap because it's been a good night, actually.
I felt optimistic, so I had to even things out, Sarah.
Yeah, that's you. That tracks. But this was a really strong night, and I want to say I actually maybe liked Jasmine Crockett more than one might think. I tend to think that right now she did not run a very good campaign, but I sort of like the gutsy, like, let's try, like, let's be a fighter. Like, you're going to need some of that energy. And I really hope she does go to bat for James Tallarico going into this. That would be, like, a strong move on her part. But I do think Tallarico was the best choice in terms of putting a seat in play. And I'm just going to say again, Republicans now have already spent more on this Senate fight between Cornyn and Paxton than they wanted to. Now they've got to spend more money on a runoff, and this is going to be a competitive Senate race in Texas now. And so for those of you who are disappointed about Jasmine Crockett, I understand, but I do think everybody should think hard. Like, and look, nobody's here being Pollyannish about waves or anything else. Or it's just that for Texas to be in play, when you're seeing these big swings, it means it's worth looking at. And I'm somebody who, last go around, I was like, leave Texas alone, guys. It's not going to happen. But I think, you know, Ohio now will look very competitive in this type of environment, especially if we're in a war where you got Sherrod Brown running. And so this is a good first step, in my opinion.
All right, everybody, close out. Well, recent Bulwark podcast guest Bobby Pulido, a Bulwark fan and musician. What kind of music does he do? Not Latino music. Anyway, whatever. It's not my cup of tea exactly, but he was great. I liked him a lot. Very interesting candidate.
Sorry, we have one more thing, Tim, chat from Matt Marshall, our buddy. Texas Supreme Court has temporarily blocked a Dallas judge's order to keep the polls open until 9 and ordered the county to separate out votes from people who were not in line at 7 p.m. This is not a final ruling, but will create chaos in getting the results. So
why would they possibly do that? It's almost as if you think Tejano music is the kind of music I was talking about. Bobby Pulido does. It's almost as if the Republicans that run Texas want people to not have faith in elections, so it makes it easier for them to steal them. It's almost as if that. It's almost as if they're trying to defund election administration and make this as hard as possible and as confusing as possible so they can do shenanigans in the future. That's just something to keep an eye out. So that's a negative thing. On the positive side, James Tallarico ran a great campaign with a big win over Jasmine Crockett. On the Republican side, John Cornyn and Ken Paxton are going to a runoff, which means that they're going to have to spend a lot of rich Republicans' money trying to prop John Cornyn up. That's great. We like that. Dan Crenshaw, good riddance.
Goodbye.
Lost a primary to a Mr. Toth. Tough titties for you, Dan Crenshaw, and some Democratic overperformance in other places. So generally a good night. We appreciate you guys for doing this with us. We have made many primary nights ahead. So
yes.
Leave some comments. Let us know what you thought about how this things went. We will take your notes. I'll take your negative criticisms. You know,
if you don't
things
like,
you'd like to see.
If you don't like the ads, I've seen some complaining about ads in the chat. Go ahead and become a subscriber. Just bid $10 a month. And you know what? You can watch all of these as we get into primary season. There'll be lots of them. There will be no commercials. I know they're interrupting us. So just go subscribe, guys. Yeah. Subscribe for free or subscribe paid, and you'll never see the ads again.
That's Sarah Longwell. You would never hear me saying she looks old because she looks amazing. She's the publisher. Jonathan Last, the editor, author of the Triad newsletter. I'm an aging Tim Miller. What a night. I'll see you tomorrow on the podcast. Later, y'all. Subscribe. Tell your friends.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. And when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.